The following is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Monday edition of The Drive. It is game week. I know we had college football over the weekend. We had only eight games involving FBS teams. There was a lot. There was a lot of football to watch. I didn't watch a complete game. I watched bits and pieces of quite a few. But man, we've got it. Everybody is playing this weekend, so looking forward to that. And of course, we will we'll talk a good bit about Auburn Baylor. Today, Alex Golish held his first season weekly press conference. And we also had a chance to talk with both the coordinators, offensive coordinator Joel Gordon and defensive coordinator DJ Durkin. So we'll talk about what they had to say. Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com joining me here in the studio. Hey, traffic is crazy today. And Brian, I decided to come the long way. I was just telling Brandon, who's got the board again today, that I decided to take what I thought would be the less stop way.
I did the same.
I came all the way around on University.
I did too.
So yeah, well, you were starting closer than I was because I live out by Chautauqua.
Right,
so I
right.
came around, crossed South College, and came, and for some reason, I got in traffic that never topped 40 miles an hour, all the way from before Richland all the way around until I hit College Street. We were going 35 or 40, both lanes. I'm thinking, yeah. I'm not gonna make it, but I did. So here I am, and
I got caught by the train. So
that's always great. Yeah. But hey, here we are. It is it's the Monday of game week.
How about
for game one for the Alex Golish era.
I can't believe we're finally here. It feels like it's been kind of a long off season.
Yeah, he got asked that today.
Yeah, he did.
About, you know, has it seemed like it's taken forever to get here, or has it really passed? And he said, well, it's flown by, but yeah, I mean, so it's one of those things. It has been a crazy, almost exactly 9 months for Alex Golish as the Tigers and the Baylor Bears will meet Saturday afternoon over at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. And Brian, I've got to say again today, everybody's pretty upbeat. Alex Golish and both the coordinators seem to feel pretty darn good about where they are heading into the season.
Yeah, I think they feel good about themselves. I think they feel like they've really challenged this unit on both sides of the ball, done a lot of ones versus ones, and you know, especially for the offensive line to get those guys, five new starters, five transfers, working on the same page, and get some of the guys, a lot of returning guys on defense, but get some of the new guys, you know, to pick that up better and be able to do all the things that Durkin likes to do with that unit. But they did talk a little bit about Baylor today. You know, I think there's some concern about DJ Lagway and what his upside and potential is.
He's got a high ceiling.
Right. I think people underestimate him because of what
because, you know, Florida was terrible last year.
They were, and as Alex and I think Gordon both mentioned, that he was really banged up, and they really admired how tough he was last season watching him play with the injuries he had, which I don't know specifically what those were, but that's one, I think, big concern. I think the other big concern is Baylor brought in a new defense coordinator from Kansas State. He's run some different defenses. He switched it up last year. They don't know exactly what to prepare for.
Yeah, Kansas State's been pretty good defensively.
Right, right. So they are expecting Kansas State to mix up things, to really try to confuse them. Going up against an offensive line, you know, with five new starters, five transfers, that can be a recipe for some issues. So we shall see how that looks on Saturday.
Yeah, yeah, indeed. But again, I mean, the good news is I think they're pretty healthy. Sound like they're pretty healthy. Alex Goley said they're in good shape physically. They're in good shape mentally.
Yes, and we got an official depth chart today.
We did.
27 oars. Which is a lot. I'm not sure if it's a record, but it's a lot.
Well, it's not. Last year there were 30-something.
30, yeah.
But, I mean, I believe the ones on defense because that's DJ Durkin. And he talked about that today. And you look at that, you look at the defensive depth chart, and everybody who is in bold is going to play. And I'd say quite a few of the guys that aren't are going to play.
They're, no doubt.
I mean, he believes in having fresh guys out there. Obviously, he's not going to put someone out there that he doesn't feel is quality enough to be able to play. But all
four linebackers are definitely playing and playing a lot. Right? They're going to play different.
Champ Anthony is listed at three positions.
Yeah, he is.
I mean, you've got new boy Fagans at two. I mean, the versatility that this defense has. How about Darian Smith? Smith is listed as a possible starter at either tackle or end.
And, you know, DJ Durkin has talked about that a lot. But one thing he hasn't done is gone to specifics about it. So I am personally excited to see exactly who's playing where and what that actually means. Of course, I'm sure they want Baylor to be surprised by it, too.
DJ is old school. DJ is one of the coaches that we've gotten used to over the last few years. If you ask him a question, he'll give you a good answer, but he won't give you specifics.
No.
He won't name names. Yeah. If you ask him a name, he'll generally talk about everybody.
And sometimes he'll just give you the quote you want about talking about how this guy stepped up, blah, 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 whatever. But, yes, Auburn has been fortunate to have a lot of good defense coordinators, and I think he's right up there with the best that
I've covered. I absolutely agree.
And that's a really, really strong group.
Well, I mean, his ability, he's taken different types of players and still been able to have really good defenses. And you look at where he's been, everywhere he's been, he's had good defenses, and it hasn't always been a bunch of five stars.
Yep. And, you know, the thing, I keep going back to this. I'm sure I mentioned it before, but I thought Auburn had two really good edge guys last year in Kieron and who was the other edge guy? Kieron Crawford.
Oh, I know. Now I'm blanking.
And Keldrick Falk. Duh.
Yeah, Keldrick.
Just a first-round draft pick.
Yeah,
right?
Of course, I think of Keldrick more as a strong side end, but no, he was a great
But your two got your, in, your mm-hmm. two ends or two edges, whatever you want to call them. Actually, the depth chart has it defensive end of Buck.
Right.
And they have not labeled on the roster.
They have Jared and Deshaun at the same
spot at the buck. Right, which is interesting. But back to what I was saying. So you have these two really good edges or ends, whatever you want to call them, and it's Xavier Atkins that leads the team in tackles.
Mm-hmm.
And that just tells you that DJ knows his personnel, knows how to use them, and is going to bring it from anywhere at any time. And I think you look at these linebackers, he's got four guys that could be Xavier Atkins, in my opinion.
Yeah, all four of them are listed. I mean, they're all they have oars. Elijah Melendez or Bryce Diaz, Xavier Atkins or DeMarcus Reddick.
So while they're propping up DJ Lagway, and that's great, that they should, that's what every coach should be doing on the staff, he is going to have a lot of things thrown at him.
Oh, yes.
A lot.
And that's why I had to ask the last question because we've been asking Alex Golish, and he was asked it again today, and Joel Gordon and offensive guys, what's it like to go against DJ defense? What's it like to go against DJ defense? And I was thinking about it when DJ was talking about how good DJ Lagway is, how athletic DJ Lagway is.
That's got to
work both ways too, because I'm sure it's really good for this defense to be going against Byron Brown.
Yeah, they're pretty similar in a lot of ways. Obviously, Byron had put up a lot bigger numbers, but Byron was healthy for most of last year and was in an offense that was working, and DJ was the opposite in both games.
Oh, yeah, but I was just thinking, I mean, to prepare your defense to be able to go against a guy with that kind of athleticism who's had the kind of fall we know he's had.
Yeah,
I mean, there is no question. And Joel Gordon and Alex Golish both seem pretty darn excited about how the offense has done the last few weeks.
And they've been pretty glowing about Byron Brown on and off the field, everything about
him. Oh, yeah. DJ just chimed right in there, too, about what a great leader he was on and off the
field. And I'm sure we'll talk to – I'm sure it'll be Byron, Cole Best. I don't know who it'll be on defense, but I'm sure those will be some of the guys we talk to tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah, so we'd love to hear from you. Give us your thoughts. You know – Maybe I've just been so close that my glasses have turned orange and blue or whatever. But I really, Brian, I have a hard time. I've got a pick a game, and I hate doing this.
Yeah, I need to get those going.
I got reminded by Doug about his picking contest.
I'm going to work on that tonight, as you mentioned.
Well, yours is a little different, though. Doug makes us go by the line.
Right. I'm easier.
You're right. And I do much better in your picking contest.
Me too.
but Auburn's a 7.5-point favorite, and I just think that unless they do some things to hurt themselves.
Yeah. We don't know. We don't know what's going to happen, right?
I know. But look, they won by 14
last year
at Baylor.
Right.
And I think they are a much better offensive unit than they were a year ago.
I think so.
And I don't think the defense is going to take a huge step backwards.
I don't either. I mean, they could take a step forward. If they take a step back, it's a small one.
You just, of course, what we don't know is how much better can Baylor be?
And what we don't know is,
because Baylor was supposed to have been pretty good last year, and they flopped.
We don't know how sloppy it's going to be first game.
Right.
Right. Sometimes teams kind of lay an egg or have some issues or they fumble. You just don't know.
Oh, yeah.
So, but I feel pretty good about Auburn going in that game. I feel like Alex Golish, being that attention to detail guy, I'd be a little surprised if Auburn was that team that came out sloppy and looked unprepared in that first game. But we'll see.
Yeah, you're right. 334-321-1390 is the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Love for you to join in, and we'll get right to it. And Dave is up first. Hey, Dave.
Hey. I finally got my TV all changed up here, and I watched the press conference today. Couple of questions. Is it Pleasant or Pleasant? Years ago, I knew a gentleman in Lafayette. He wouldn't answer to Pleasant. Is that more named Pleasant or Pleasant?
That's a good question, James. That's a good question. I mean, all we've ever heard is Pleasant.
Yeah.
There is not two Coonasses in the world that pronounce that way.
Nah, you're probably right. I lived in Louisiana for a while as well. so yeah, I mean, that's not unlikely, and he may just sort of take it that's a way. Where is Rayshon originally from? That's what I've got. I need to check on that. Do you know, Brian?
I'm not sure. I thought he was from Louisiana, wasn't he?
Yeah, I thought he was too. I thought he was from like New Orleans area.
I did too.
And if so, James, it very well could be
West Monroe, Louisiana.
West Monroe. Yeah. Then it's probably really likely, James, that it's Pleasant.
Yeah.
All right.
Next time we talk to him, maybe tomorrow, maybe we can ask him.
Yeah, he very well could be one of the guys. He, by the way, is listed as Auburn's top punt returner as well as kick returner.
Yes, which I think is a great move. Yeah.
Okay, hold on. One more thing. Address what his thoughts were on more or less temporary game day captains.
That was a great answer.
I asked because I knew one of the things that he's talked about, that Alex Golish talked about ever since he got here, is wanting to be player led, that the players have to be leaders. And he's talked about it a few times, and he's mentioned a few. So I asked him who were some of the leaders of this team, and I asked him if there were game captains.
Right.
And he went into – first, I thought, think about this. I think this is a very positive answer, because he said he didn't think there were enough leaders yet. And then he listed 10, more than a dozen players as leaders on this team. Let me tell you, that's a good sign that he was able to name that many players, but he's still looking for more leaders.
Right.
But then he got to the captain's part, and I thought this was a very good answer. He said basically that nobody's done anything yet to prove they are the captain for the year, to put a C on their jersey
for the whole season
and have them be a season captain.
Yeah. Maybe Byron Brown has.
But it makes a lot of sense when you have so many players that are coming together for the first time and they haven't been through the wars together. They haven't been on the field together to see who really is their captain.
So
he said there will be each week there will be game captains. Yeah. Right. But right now, there is not a season.
That's by his answer,
I've been impressed by so many of his answers ever since he got here, James. I mean, there's no question about that.
One more thing. Nobody able to help me go get over to Atlanta, and I put my three tickets up for sale, and they sold like right within an hour.
Wow. I'm sorry you can't go. I mean, you didn't let me know. I mean, we could have squeezed you in probably.
Yeah. Well, see, and I told me know a little bit. Anyway, really, problem with my wife this year. She in January, I had to put her in the nursing home. Hmm. So it was my ticket, her ticket, and my plumbing son in Florida was supposed to be the thing. But I'm having too much trouble with my wife and everything. So, but anyway, it's real surprising. So I'll sit home with a pocket full of money.
Well, that's nice. That's nice. As a matter of fact, I have an extra ticket. I was going to mention that on the air. I've got an extra one that I'm not looking. Yeah, I'm not looking to get rich or anything off of it. I'll probably let it go for less than what they charged me.
Wow.
But it's one is all I've
right.
got. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, buddy. Thanks for taking
me. Man, it's good hearing from you, James. Glad, man. Yeah, don't be a stranger. It's been a while.
Good enough. It has.
Take care, man. James, yeah, it's been a long time since we've heard from him, and it's a shame he can't go to the game. Now he is a big time. I mean, he'll go to the Tiger walks and the reverse Tiger walks, and when the team's leaving and things like that. For basketball, he'll be the first guy in the arena a lot of the times. I mean, he is
that's impressive.
He is die hard. There's no question about that. All right, we'll get to our first break. We'll take a look at the depth chart and talk about any. I mean, there are a couple of things that you go about. I mean, no big shocks. I don't think when I looked at the depth chart, but we'll take a look at that and more. Love to hear from you. And again, if you're looking for a ticket to the game Saturday, I've got one. It's it's a TUF lower level ticket. So, and it's in section 103. So, I mean, no question, it's in the middle of the Auburn stuff. If anybody is interested, you can call in and we'll get Brandon to go ahead and get that info so we don't have to do it really on the air. Bill and Brian here again. We got to come up the like a Killer Bees Monday or something like that. I mean, because we've got Bill, Brian, and Brandon here on our Monday editions of The Drive.
Let's get back to The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill and Brian here on another, man, it's another hot one.
Yeah, have you seen, I mean, it doesn't affect us, but in Tuscaloosa, how hot it's going to be for their opener. Have you seen that? Like
no.
110 heat index or something like that?
And they've got artificial turf.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man.
No, they don't have that in Alabama, do they, Tuscaloosa? They don't have artificial turf, do they?
Is it not? I'm
pretty
was.
Sure it's grass.
Yeah, no, I guess it is.
Yeah.
I guess it is.
Yeah.
Still, it's going to be hot. As...
Now, Legion Field back in the day had some nasty artificial turf.
It was ugly, too.
Yes.
I mean,
yes, it was.
No, you're right. But that's going to be awful. I'm glad. That's one thing. And we were talking about it last week. You know, I mean, it sucks not to be playing at home, but if you're going to be playing at 2:30 in the afternoon, put me inside.
Yes. Yes. That is the, besides the NIL, and I know people were upset about it. I don't blame them, but that is one plus playing in Mercedes-Benz Stadium and not Jordan-Hare on Saturday is you get to escape this really tough heat wave that's going on right now.
Yeah. I mean, this thing has been, I mean, it's brutal. It's, we've gotten a little rain here and there, hardly any out on my side of town.
Yeah.
I mean, it has just been – it's so scorching hot all the time. So yeah, it's going to be that way again. All right, as we mentioned a little while ago, we had an opportunity to talk with Alex Golish and both coordinators. Before we look at the depth chart, what were the most interesting things you thought that came out of talking to those three today, Brian?
Well, I thought what we talked about already, the leadership thing, that to me struck me as, hey, that's the thing you got to write about first, which Justin did, and talk about the most. Just that how much emphasis that Alex Golish has put on it, how he's not quite satisfied with it, but he still sees a lot of progress. And as we mentioned, he he clicked off a bunch of names. But as he clicked off,
now that I look at, I think I count 16 names that he mentioned.
As he clicked off, though, some of them were like, "Well, he's coming along, or he's stepping up, or
he's coming out of his shell."
Coming out of his shell, right?
Right. So, few times.
So some of those guys are guys that are in positions where they need to be leaders. And they do everything right on the field, but maybe they're not speaking up and taking that verbal leadership role, which
is tough for some folks.
Right. And which Alex Golish, one of the first things he said when he was hired was, I forget the exact quote, but it was being a quiet leader is not being a leader, something to that effect, right? He wants guys that are going to do everything right.
He said leading by example is not being a leader.
There you go. Yeah. So he wants guys that will step up and speak out.
I mean, it's leading, but it's not being a leader.
Right.
So. Yeah, he wants someone, and we've seen it in practice, and I mean, I've noticed it more, and Don talked about it. When Don Dunn was on Friday, he talked about it a little bit.
Because he went to practice.
He got over and watched practice, I think, Thursday.
It was him and Gus, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw a picture of him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But he said he was impressed with the players encouraging other players and coaching the players.
Yep.
And that's something I've seen more of. Yeah. Really, this fall than I can recall.
I didn't really think of it at the time, but as I'm looking back on all the fall camps we went to and got to see, you're absolutely right. There was a whole lot of that, whole lot of guys talking to other guys about what's going on or trying to lift them up. So you can see that imprint about Scholes and how he likes to run a program right there, right away.
Oh, yeah. So, so that was really impressive. I mean, I asked both the coordinators just, if they liked where their side of the ball was, and any concerns, DJ didn't get to the concerns.
No, he didn't at all. Because I'm excited to hear this, but he didn't say it. Yeah. What are your concerns?
None. I just to hear how excited he is. It seems like he's pretty excited about his defensive front.
Yeah.
And everybody was already pretty excited about the linebackers and the safeties. So, I mean, I would say that there's reason to be excited about this defense again.
Well, maybe I've underestimated those guys. I mean, obviously they've made a lot of progress, but maybe they're even better than I think they're going to be. You know, guys like Cody Sigler, do not call him a high-effort guy.
No.
Right? And Walter Mathis and Darion.
But Dallas Walker is a guy that has gotten just tons of praise.
Yep.
All fall long, and you can see how guys have changed the way they look.
Oh yeah,
I mean they have really worked. They have really worked to get themselves ready.
Nobody more than Elijah Melendez, although he was put together.
He looks like he's competing for Mr. Olympia or something like that. I mean,
I just feel so bad for that running back when he meets him and just pops him. I mean that dude is going to feel that for days afterwards. I can't wait to see him play.
Well, I'm just really excited. I'll go back to the way DJ wrapped up things today, when it's the smile on his face when he said it's going to be so good not to be going against these guys every day.
Yeah.
So I mean that tells me that to me makes me feel even better, because we've heard so many times over the last few years that the offense would have moments in practice, not a lot of them. We've heard much more this fall about the offense making plays, explosive plays, big passing plays, some long drives and things like that. And I feel like if you do that against DJ Durkin, and DJ Durkin is in the kind of mood that he's in today, that tells me he feels pretty good about what the guys on the other side of the ball are going to do to help him.
Yeah, and you know what I think another part of this is, and we haven't talked to him about this, but I think he feels like he's a part of a staff that's a lot like him, right?
Yeah, I think
before it was sort of two different teams.
Oh, everybody's
on the same page now. They're all very similar in their approach and how they want to practice, how they want to coach up individual players, how they kind of speak to each other and the players. It's very – it's a group that I think meshes really well together.
Yeah, and it was I get Jay asked Golish about the had he asked DJ to just really try to mess with Byram.
Yeah.
And Golish was like, No, because DJ Durkin messes with everybody all the time.
Yeah.
And there's no reason to go over, no reason to go any further than that. But But yeah, I mean, but he obviously they went good on good more than we had than we're
and
used
defensive
to.
Defensive coaches love that.
Yes.
Right. They love to. They love that. That really can get their players out there and test them and get them going in those situations. That's what they want to see. So I can see why DJ really enjoyed this fall camp.
Yeah, and then on offense, it didn't. I mean, Joel Gordon and Alex Golish didn't seem to back away from that. They wanted. I mean, they want to have an idea what these guys are going to be able to do against SEC defenses.
Yep. I'm very interested to see. You know, the offensive line is going to be so important to see how they perform. I think the best thing that can happen for Auburn on Saturday is just be able to run the ball.
Right.
Right. And take the pressure off. Don't let Kansas State and their defensive coordinator do a bunch of things to you on third and long to force you to make mistakes.
No, if they can get into second and manageable third and short, you know, then that's great. I mean, it won't be the most exciting, you know, thing to see, but it'll mean a lot that they can do that, because you know that that's what Baylor's going to try to do. Yeah. Is stop Auburn, because they sure couldn't last year.
Nope. No, they ran the ball. I forget how many yards they had, but they ran the ball really well last year.
Mm-hmm.
And Jackson Arnold had a pretty good game, if I remember correctly.
He did. But Jackson had a good first half the other night.
Yeah.
Did you watch that?
I did not, but I watched on Twitter.
He had a really good first half.
As the first half Twitter was, Hugh Freeze is terrible, Jackson Arnold's good. And then the second half was
like, oh, God, it's we've seen this before.
Yeah.
Because Jackson was like 16 for 20 for 200 and something yards and rushed for 90 in the first half. And then by the end of the game, he had 60 yards rushing and barely 60% completion.
I don't know if this is true, but I saw on Twitter that he was sacked six times in the second half.
Oh, he was. Tough. Well, that's what I mean. He had negative 30 something yards in the second half to rushing for 90 in the first.
I have a feeling that we're going to have to get Jackson Arnold updates and
Daniels.
Yeah, and who's the receiver at Texas?
Cam.
We'll get a bunch of Cam Coleman updates.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
As the season goes on every week. So that's just Auburn Twitter, I guess, or the message boards.
Oh, yeah, all right. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. We didn't even get into the depth chart. We will do that. But, of course, your calls come first, 334-321-1390. Bill and Brian here on the Monday edition of The Drive.
And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
They showed that highlight I was watching.
No, that's all right. We're just flashing back and talking.
We were talking about 80s football and the Iron Bowl, right? And I was watching an ESPN thing. It was Saturday in the South or something.
Uh-huh.
And they were doing 80s in the SEC, and they showed the highlight of the 85 Iron Bowl, my first one. And showed the receiver getting out of bounds, and he was clearly down before he got out of bounds. Clearly.
Luvell Bivens. It was Greg Richardson. Bivens riding him on the back.
The clock should have not stopped. The game should have been over. There should have never been a 52-yard field goal.
What an unbelievable fourth quarter it was, though. Both teams up and down the field in the fourth quarter. Yeah, buddy.
Here I am crying about it 40 years later.
My buddy Mark Green and I came down from the press box, and we're on the sideline right next to Pat Washington, who looked, I mean, and he was just physically sick watching that last Alabama drive, because he had done something. He would be one of the, you know, all-time Auburn legends for leading his team down the field to what looked like a sure victory before Shula hit Richardson.
But
those
Iron Bowls in the 80s were so physical. I just remember being there in Legion Field and just hearing them knock the you know what out of each other, man.
Oh, yeah. What memories? This got into we were listening to the promo there, and heard Al doing a little Keith Jackson, I said that reminded me of the 84 game when Bo just tore Alabama a new one, and the tornado game where Auburn had the wind at its back in the third quarter, and then. The storm, then the weather came, and Auburn had a huge win. It is back in the fourth quarter, something you've never seen. Yeah. But as Bo breaks off that last run, all right, we're there at the game. As a matter of fact, my wife is trying to figure where's the safest place.
Right, and you're like, I'm watching the game.
Yeah. but we went over to Floyd's family was lived in Vestavia, so we went right there after the game, and we're watching the tape of the game. And didn't realize I still will never forget Keith Jackson's call on that second Bo touchdown as he breaks into the clear. It's like, look out. And then he said, in your face, which I thought was so un-Keith Jackson. But it was. It was just such a whoa, where'd that come from?
A legend. But I think a lot of people, especially Auburn people, associated with him. With Alabama more than
he called a lot of great Alabama wins.
He did.
And people then go, well, then he's a Bammer. Well, but
a legend, definitely
one of the greatest all time announcers ever. Yeah. All right, 3-3. Oh, we lost our caller.
Oh man,
3-3-4.
We talked too much, Bill.
Yeah, 334-321-1390 is the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Love your thoughts. All right, while we're waiting. Let's see. We got somebody there, Brandon?
Oh, yeah, Clay.
We got Clay up next. We'll go ahead and get to Clay. Hey, Clay.
Hey, Bill, and I know that I have a tendency to call and pretend that I'm old. You are, really old.
I am.
Brian
was at the game, too. I mean, that's only, golly, just think about that. That's 42 years ago, man.
I know.
I know. Hey, baby, as I'm about to flip the year 53 over, you're starting to feel it in your body. I think there's one thing.
Hey, here's some good news for you, Clay. It ain't going to get any better. Yeah.
Hey, guess what? I know. Go.
No. I was just making fun with Bill too. But go ahead.
No, I'm just telling you. I've got two knees and one hip that's on the way out, and I use my body hard. I've raised four youngins and two grand youngins so far. So,
wow.
I did pretty good. But I think it's like the yin and yang that was so great and so terrible. The people that are, let's say, people that are 35 and younger, they have no idea how great it is for your football team to be playing on television.
True.
You just take it for granted.
That was 1986, I think, that changed, if I'm not mistaken. Because that was on the show I was watching.
Go ahead.
No, I was saying that was 1986 that changed. I think I don't remember if it was a lawsuit or what happened, but the conferences were able to pull those television rights away from the NCAA, and that's when it kind of opened everything up.
I remember, and see, I was on the tail end of the Barfield years. I can barely remember them. Bo, I was 10 years old when Bo was a freshman at Auburn, mm-hmm. and Coach Dye, that was in his second year.
Right.
And it was like, we're starting to be good. It's when let me preface this. If anybody is listening right now and they have young children in their car, I'm going to give you 30 seconds to turn your radio off, because I'm fixing to tell a story that will ruin your children's lives.
Oh no!
Oh, wow!
If they're young, but I remember back. Now I'm going to continue, and then I'm going to go back to what I just referenced.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the Montgomery Advertiser had an article at the beginning of probably, I think it was like 85, and it said Auburn will be on television 3 times this year. And it was like, holy mackerel. You know, we made it.
Right.
We are a contender. And Auburn was, you know, a perennial top five team for Coach Dye's, you know, 83 until 89. I mean, that's the greatest legacy we ever had. Now, I'll go back. I hope you turned your radio off. In 1982, I went to Montgomery Mall, and my mother took me and sat me on Santa Claus's lap, and I had an Auburn shirt on that said something. It had something to do with Coach Dye. I can't remember. It wasn't Dye the Tide. This was.
Back early on, it was like I'm a diehard Auburn fan or something.
That's what it was. Yeah. That was it. Yeah. Blue shirt, orange letters. Yeah. I'm a diehard Auburn fan. And that was the year before the Dyed and Tied orange and blue 23-22. And then the 23-20, the dynasty continues. And I sat in Santa Claus's lap. And he said, "What kind of shirt is that you have on?" I said, "Well, this is my Auburn shirt." He's like, "You know, Santa Claus doesn't like Auburn. They're not going to win today." This was the day of the Auburn-Alabama game. Wow. I was 9 years old.
The thing is, your entire life, Auburn had not won because it had been nine years.
Exactly. And I looked at him and I was like, "You're a fake Santa Claus. Santa Claus doesn't exist. Because Auburn is going to win." And which we didn't. I think that was like the 21-17 game or something like that.
If that was Coach Dye's first year,
they lost.
Yeah.
Yeah, that 21-17.
Yeah, 3-15. They did lose, but it was a very close game. Yeah.
That was Bear Bryant's 3-15
next year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it was these younger, you know, folks, and they don't know, and they shouldn't know. I don't remember the 50s and the 60s, but Coach Dye had this program to where they were so good.
Yep.
And I hope that we're going to enter into that again. Tuberville got really close. He just always had that one year where he lost to Arkansas or lost to South Carolina. And you're like, if you don't do that, you know, you're right there. So I hope we get back to it. So, but that just, that absolutely is the gospel truth. That's when I quit believing in Santa Claus. I was like, "You're not Santa. If you don't think Auburn can win, you're evil." And I jumped out of the boat. So, but anyhow, I can't even remember what y'all said that registered that memory way back just years and years ago. I have so many. Oh my God. I remember so many little tiny things. And here's what has occurred to me, and I know it's just hopeful thinking, Bill. I know it is, but I remember in 1993, the last team that ever got put on probation where you couldn't play on television.
Yep.
And driving to Birmingham and staying with a friend of ours that I went to school with at Auburn. I was in enrolled in Auburn at the time. And we drove from Birmingham over to
Legion.
Starkville.
Oh, okay.
To play. And we walked in. They were like, "Oh, y'all ain't beat nobody. Y'all 4-0. Y'all stink. Y'all are not going to be any good. You can say team as last year." State run the opening kickoff back for a touchdown, if you remember. The opening kickoff, and we were like, maybe we aren't that good. But there was a block in the back at like the 20-yard line. And from that point on, Auburn commenced to beating the P-winding, you know what, out of Mississippi State. And I think it was like 56-17 or something. But Auburn just run up and down the field on State that day. And I think that's what's going to happen this weekend with Baylor, is Auburn is just going to – they're going to beat them until they say – I mean, they're going to tap out. So.
Well, if they get a chance, that's what they'll try to do. I don't think there's any question. I don't see Alex Golish, you know, pulling back, holding anything back.
It's interesting. Both teams, I think, return one player on offense, mm-hmm. one starter. And I think both teams return – I know Baylor returns four starters on defense. I'm not sure exactly. I guess I can look and see exactly how many Auburn returns. But it's around that same number,
yeah,
right?
No, it's not many more. Auburn returns
Atkins
a lot.
Is a returning
Auburn
starter.
Returns a lot of guys who played a lot, though, on defense for a good defense. They return four starters on a really, really bad defense.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, yeah, Auburn only returns one starter on offense, but you've got – half a dozen starters
right.
who played this offense
right.
for this coach
exactly.
and this coordinator.
Exactly. So there is a caveat
right.
there, sure.
And guys, Xavier Atkins is, I mean, there was a guy that wore 55 back in the like 1997 named Tequila Spike.
Yes, the biggest neck of any man that's played at Auburn.
He reminds me so much of Takeo, because he's so smart, and it's not even that he's so fast. He just knows where to run before the ball snaps, and he's sitting there. It's like a Kurt Crane or, you know, one of those guys. It's like, I ain't the best, but I know where I'm supposed to be, and I'm fixing to make you have a miserable day. And, I mean, this cat, he might have his number. Right there on the other side of Cam Newton is how good I think Xavier can be. And you can argue with me, and I may be wrong, but you're going to have to prove that to me.
Well, I agree with what Brian was saying. This linebacker group is going to be fun to watch regardless of who's on the field. I mean, they've got four guys that can fly, that are athletic and physical. I mean, this is going to linebacker group as I can remember at Auburn.
Yep, I agree.
Hey, we got to run, Clay. Great stuff. Good hearing from you.
All right, guys. Hey, y'all have a great week. And I am just absolutely – I could run through this oak tree that I'm looking at right now. I'm so ready.
Don't try that.
Don't drink a bunch of beers and go trying it out now. We don't need any of that.
I don't need any. I'm telling you, I'm fired up. I think this is going to be a special year, guys. I really do.
Let's go ahead and get it here.
Let's get
Saturday here. Appreciate it, Clay. Need to get to our final break of hour number one. Love for you to join us. 334-321-1390. It's the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. We'll get around to looking at the depth chart. But again, your calls come first here on the Monday Drive.
Time to churn up some more yardage on The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. It's a busy time, Brian. I mean, there's with football getting underway. I mean, there's a lot going on, and I think as you can tell from Clay there, I mean, a lot of Auburn folks are really anxious to go ahead and let's see what we've got.
Yes, I mean, game week cannot get here soon enough. It's finally here. We've had our major press conference. We talked to Alex Golish. We talked to OC Joel Gordon. We talked to DC DJ Durkin. We'll get players tomorrow. Then we'll catch up with Golish on Wednesday. And then it's a couple of days and they're headed to Atlanta, and we'll be there covering it. But yes, big day, you know, for us. I think we've got four or five stories up already just from the press conference, and we'll have plenty more, you know, in the coming days, plus talking to players tomorrow. And then we're still running our special 75% off that annual subscription, which is a great deal right now. So you want to jump on board and get that. And, of course, recruiting should pick back up once Auburn starts hosting football games.
And that's another reason why I just don't see Alex Golish as attentive he is to every single detail.
Yeah.
He wants – I think he definitely wants to make a good impression on the eyes that are out there watching that he'd like to bring in for visits.
Yeah, and I haven't even asked yet, but I'm going to go ahead and assume that they're going to have some kids in Atlanta because I think you can do that now. But we'll check into that for sure. That'll be something to keep an eye on at AuburnSports.com here in the coming days. And Jeffrey Lee will be right on top of that. And, you know, we'll just continue to blow out the coverage. And, of course, I know we'll talk about the musings here a little bit
later.
Yeah,
we're usually around 5:30-ish or so is when we get into those.
It's pretty – I think you already know who it is.
I'd be surprised if I didn't.
Yeah, exactly. You got it already. Yep.
Yeah, so that's coming up as well. We're approaching the top of the hour, our top of the hour break. Love for you to join in hour number two. What are you looking forward to? What are you the most excited about? What are you the most concerned about? What did Joel Gordon say his biggest concern was? I'm trying to remember. DJ sort of didn't say it. It seemed like just how the young guys handled everything, basically, is sort of what it was. Just how they all handled everything out there with not a lot of experience playing together. So, I mean, there were no, I'm worried about this position or something else.
He said it's the newness.
Yes.
There are so many guys that have never been on the field playing in the game for Auburn together. It's just, that's it.
Yeah.
Newness.
Yep. All right. We're halfway done here on the Monday Drive. Love for you to join us in hour number two, which is coming up.
Capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Monday Drive. Bill, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com here in the studio. Brandon at the controls, and we'd love for you to join in. Anything on your mind sports-wise, it is Monday of game week. There will be big-time college football starting Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday.
Can't wait.
Yeah, of course, right in the middle of that. Not a lot of just huge marquee matchups. I would guess LSU Clemson's probably as big a matchup as there is.
That should be fun.
And when you're looking at SEC games, Ole Miss, Louisville, and then Auburn, Baylor. I would think. Yeah. Because most everybody else is playing one of those teams that they ought to be able to pretty much name the score against.
Right. Colorado, Georgia Tech could be fun.
Yeah, although Georgia Tech could blow them out.
I don't know. I don't know what to expect from Colorado. What's the Friday night? Is there a good Friday night? Miami at Stanford.
Let me see. Andy. I need to pull up the. Yeah, I don't have the schedule right here in front of me right now. I'm trying to think. I mean, they're decent games. Doesn't Mizzou play Thursday?
Do they?
I think they do. They play a nobody, on Thursdays.
Yeah, they play Arkansas Pine Bluff Thursday night.
That's one.
Idaho plays at Utah, which is on ESPNU Thursday night. So, UAB at Illinois late Thursday night.
Wow. Yeah, that is. That's That's odd.
Yeah, it is odd.
8 o'clock game on the Big Ten Network.
Same with Fresno State at USC late Friday night.
Oklahoma plays Friday. They host UTEP.
Mm.
Yeah, Miami Stanford is Friday. USC's got Fresno. You look at most of the ranked teams, and there's not a, you know, there aren't games that you just go, wow, what a tremendous matchup. Like I said,
no, there's not. I mean, yeah. Marshall at Penn State. There's just not.
Yeah, the Ole Miss Louisville game's the only ranked matchup, and that one's Sunday night.
Okay, wow.
Yeah. That's what I said. You know, LSU, Clemson, Ole Miss, Louisville are probably the top two. And then, as far as just having some appeal to folks in multiple areas, I would think Auburn Baylor is going to be not far behind on some of those.
Absolutely.
Today, Auburn starting its real game week. They had mock game week. Alex Golish. Well, all the coaches were asked about mock game week. We talked with Alex Golish and both coordinators, Joel Gordon and DJ Durkin today.
Yeah, and they seemed to all be pleased with it. I think they felt like they learned a lot during it. They were able to iron out some kinks or some things that weren't quite right, you know, going through it the first time. That'll run much smoother now that they're actually in game week.
So they basically were able to get the first time done before the first week. And that's something, you know, we've seen many, many times, mock games, game walkthroughs, that type thing. But it's all the things leading up to it. And you'd like them to be as routine as possible once you get going into the season. Right. And it makes perfect sense to go ahead and do it when you've got an extra week there.
And it wasn't just for the players. It was for them establishing a routine, but it's also for the coaches.
I mean, a few of these coaches have been together.
Right.
But, you know, this is a new coaching staff that is heading into its first game together as
Joel,
a group.
Joel Gordon mentioned it was his fourth time doing it, but he went back to his first time doing it, and it really, really made a difference for him. And I'm sure it's the same way with a lot of the new coaches joining this staff, especially all the defensive guys that were retained and brought in there. So, I think it was very successful. I think it's just one of those things we talked about throughout fall camp, them doing the full game simulation for the first scrimmage, which I don't believe I've seen. Or if I have, I don't recall it because I'm old. But, that's just one of those attention to detail things that you just don't necessarily see or have seen in other previous staffs we've covered.
Yeah, and it has obviously been everything has been planned out, and Alex Golish has talked about it. He's mentioned it multiple times. I mean, he knows, or at least he has scheduled what he's supposed to be doing pretty much every minute of every day.
Yeah.
And I don't mean just for this week.
I'm pretty sure he walked in our interview room at exactly 12 o'clock, or really, really close to it.
It was very, very close to it. Yeah.
That doesn't happen very often, but you can tell that's who Alex Golish is.
He's supposed to be there. The press conference is supposed to start then, it's going to start then. And he again, man, we've been to a lot of press conferences, Brian. I don't know that I've come out of any other coaches consistently feeling like, well, you got what you asked for.
Right.
I mean, a lot of coaches you could ask. You can try to come up with all different ways to ask questions, and you generally, if they don't want to answer it, they'll just give you a nothing burger,
right.
And you know, just won't name any names. Alex Golish has no problem, you know. You ask him, he'll tell you, and he'll tell you who he's been impressed with, who he's proud of, who's done well, and he knows. He also knows everybody at every position on the team.
Yeah. Which is something I still don't know. There's
some head coaches that have sort of deferred, not knowing, who like the backup or the number three guy on the other side of the ball that's not their forte.
Yeah.
We didn't ask him about the depth chart because we'd gotten that information a little earlier.
Right.
But the depth chart, the first official depth chart of the year, is out now. And there are a few things that I go, I don't remember seeing it exactly that way. Although
I don't think any of the starters surprised me.
No,
I guess Jared Smith not being being a co-starter, I guess with Deshaun Womack at Buck and having a defensive end with Chris Murray and Jared Smith, their co-starters was a little bit of a surprise. But I knew those four guys were playing and are starting no matter what.
I think the thing to keep in mind as we go through it here is the players that are listed as starters or co-starters.
Yeah.
They're all in bold when you look at the depth chart.
Right.
When you look at these guys, I think these are the guys that the coaches really feel like, all right, we can count on these guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
May not necessarily. And that person that is in bold at one of the positions where there's only one of them is going to be able to be out there. And it could very well be a situation like where, as you mentioned, there at the defensive end of the Buck, where Deshaun Womack and Jared Smith are listed at one spot and Chris Murray and Darian Smith are listed at the other spot, there very well could be times where you're going to see both of the guys that are listed at one spot on the field at the same time.
Absolutely. I can't imagine we're not going to see Womack and Smith out there together.
Oh, yeah.
Especially in passing situations, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you would just figure that from the first play of the game, it's probably not going to
–
they wouldn't expect it to be that way. Right. I was a little surprised at the – where they had some of the guys, as far as being second or third on the depth chart, I wasn't surprised there. But to see the receivers, are you have Chaz Nimrod, it's Chaz Nimrod or Christian Neptune
spot. Sometimes I feel like a lot of these ors are just because they'd like to keep players happy.
Well,
right?
I think they're wanting to give praise to
right.
to guys that have had a good camp and that they're going to play.
Right. They want to reward
Chaz Nimrod, your starter.
Yes, absolutely. Keyshawn Singleton and Jeremiah Koger are the other starters, no matter what.
And Christian Neptune's going to play. You know what that tells me, and it's pretty obvious when we've been watching, he's the number four guy.
Yeah.
I mean, your four top receivers are Nimrod, Neptune, Singleton, and Koger. Four transfers from USF.
I don't think he was in the top 6 and 7 when the fall camp started.
No.
So he deserves a ton of credit for doing that.
And
of course, he was hurt, right? He had to get healthy, mm-hmm. but still, he deserves a ton of credit for what he's accomplished during camp and competed and was able to do that.
No, what I was a little surprised at was that Jeremiah Koger is listed, not that he's listed as a starter, but the guys behind him, Deshaun Spencer is listed behind Jeremiah Koger, and I don't think they play the same position by any means. I think Deshaun plays where Nimrod and Christian Neptune are.
That's what I feel like too, but maybe I don't know.
It doesn't really matter.
It doesn't.
I mean, it's like, but anyway. So those are the receivers that are listed as starters.
Good to see Sam Turner in there too.
Yes,
that tells me that he and we heard about him late during fall camp that he was stepping
just last
up
last week,
and there he is right there. So that's eight different receivers on the two/three deep at wide receiver.
Right.
You know, the top five or six are going to get the majority.
Well, he said, he had six, he felt like, and he wanted eight.
Right.
And you've got eight there.
But
now,
if there's an injury or two, that seventh and eighth guy come much more important.
Mm-hmm.
So, Sam Turner, to me, that's a lot of progress because he wasn't even mentioned during spring. And he was coming back from, a broken leg, if I'm not mistaken. Pretty serious injury.
Right.
So, That's good to know for him because he's a guy that we saw a year ago and really impressed with him as a true freshman before he got hurt.
Offensive line is interesting. Three positions have just a starter.
Right.
That would be center and the two tackles. And it's obviously Cole Best at center, Joe Simmons at left tackle,
yep.
Stanton Ramil at right tackle.
And it's been that way for, I'd say,
the whole fall.
Yeah, you're right. I don't think we've – You're right. Yep.
Because we were a little surprised the first time we looked out there, and I was thinking when Stanton was out there that we'd see him at left and Joe at right. But it's been the other way, and it's stayed that way.
I thought they were going to switch
entire fall.
Yeah, I expected them to switch up, but it's been every time we've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there's probably been some switching up.
I'm sure there has.
But
at guard, you've got six different players listed as possible starters at the two guard spots.
Well, I mean, it is a little bit guard you still, right? That's a joke mm-hmm. we used to have with Gus. No offense. We love you, Gus. But I think that goes to tell you that this offensive line is guard heavy. And there are several guards, I think, that if something happened to a starting tackle in a game, like, say, Jacob Strand would probably move to tackle before they start. They brought
mm-hmm.
maybe Parker Pritchett or Wilson Zaire out, right? So that's the way I kind of see that. But we'll see what it looks like when we get out there. One thing I think to keep in mind with this offensive line is they are going to rotate some guys in. I don't know how many of those guys will rotate in if the game's still in, you know, still a good close game. But they're going to rotate just because of the speed
I think
they
want to see how different players react and how they fit in that five. Now, I'd be surprised if the starting five for the game isn't Jacob Strand at left guard and Cole Skinner at right guard.
That's the way it's looked for the last couple weeks, too.
And they are, by the way, the number one guys
list.
On the list.
Yeah.
And it's not alphabetical. So that tells me they're probably that's what we've seen. But the other guys at left guard are Derek Plaz and Jack Lehrer. And the other two at right guard are Cale Ellis, who I think is probably your backup center as well.
Right. Although Kenneth McManus is definitely a guy that has stepped up.
Yes, he has.
I think, and had a good second half of fall camp there. So,
and Jacoby Ward is a guy that really has had a good fall as well.
Yep. So I could see plenty of those guys playing in the first game, especially if Auburn can build a lead or something. But if not, I would still expect, would you think, 7 or 8 guys playing on the offensive line?
Yes.
You know, if it doesn't get out of hand,
I think 7 for sure, probably 8.
Yeah.
Tight end has the most oars on the on the sheet. We have 4 different players, and they're going to play them all if they're healthy. I mean, Jake Johnson, Arliss Boardingham, Jonathan Echols, and Trey Newsome.
Yeah. But Jake is clearly the starter.
Oh, yes.
He's been the starter. He's been talked about a lot by Alex Golish, who clearly really likes him a lot as a player and as a person, and I think he's going to be a featured part of the offense. But I think they feel so much better about some of the guys there that they maybe weren't sure about.
Oh, no. I mean, tight end was a concern early on when Alex Golish got here. He said he had to find some tight ends.
Yeah.
And he did. And they have found all 4 of those guys are newcomers. And they're all 4 very impressive.
Yeah.
Very impressive. Jonathan Echols, hopefully he's healthy. He's a guy that's been banged up a little bit this fall.
Probably has the most potential of them all if he can stay healthy, if he can get put some weeks together of being healthy and playing.
He's an NFL receiving tight end.
Sure, looks like
guy
it. Yeah.
At 6'6", 235. Now, Byron Brown's your quarterback. Tristan T is the only other guy on the depth chart there at quarterback. And running back, it is Jeremiah Cobb, and there's no oars or anything in there. And the rest of the number two spot, it is Omar Mabson or Bryson Washington with Nekai Davenport listed behind those guys.
Yeah, well, it's or
Nekai. Oh, it's or all 3 of them. My bad.
It is. But
it's
Mabson,
Washington, and Davenport.
I feel strongly that's the order they're coming out there in. I mean, I think Bryson is pushing Omar, but I think Omar is number 2.
Bryson has really come on down here.
And, you know, we got to remember this is week 1, right? Things are going to change. This is not going to be Auburn's starting lineup for the Alabama game in November.
Most likely not.
Right. Things are going to change. Players are going to step up during the season. Players will get banged up, whatever. But this is just a starting point.
Yeah. So that's the offensive depth chart. We'll get to our first break here. We'll look at the defense special teams. Don't forget, coming up at the bottom of the hour, we got Brian's Monday Musings. Love for you to join in, though. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise, 334-321-1390 as we continue with the Monday Drive.
The Drive continues. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Monday afternoon. Bill and Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. All right, we looked at the offensive depth chart. Defensively, quite a few players listed as possible starters. Up front on the defensive line at defensive tackle, Cody Sigler has had he's had a great camp. Spring, summer, fall, and every defensive player that we've talked to is just – you know, really, really mentioned him as one of the leaders, one of the guys that has really impressed them.
But he's not a high-effort guy. He is, but don't call
him
that.
He is a high-effort guy.
Well,
I mean, he doesn't want to be known as – because that makes it sound like he doesn't have any talent and he gets by just on effort.
No, I agree with you. I'm just kidding around. And he's not listed there, but he can play some D-end.
Yeah, he could. He could. He's got good enough feet. Yep. All the guys that are listed as co-starters with him at defensive tackle, and that means they're going to play a lot. Vontrell does like to play quite a few guys there up front. Walter Buddy Mathis, and Darian Smith. And Darian Smith, you'll hear his name again when we get to the defensive ends. The other, the nose tackle, but just listed as the other defensive tackle, is Dallas Walker, who we talked about a while ago as Auburn's very, very happy that he got an extra year of eligibility and has come back in tremendous shape and is really determined to be a big factor and be an every down player. Behind him are sophomore Malik Autry, who we had a chance to talk to the other day. And, man, he looks good. My goodness. Or Jordan Crawford. So a pair of sophomores right there at the other defensive tackle
spot.
The
only surprise for me there was St. Ferrier. I thought he would be in that. And I think he will definitely play.
Yeah, I think so too.
But not in the official depth chart that they put out for week one.
Well, I'm looking. Maybe, you know, none of the positions on defense show more than three players.
Right.
On offense, we had
four tight ends.
You know, four tight ends. So, I mean, I think there were an extra spot there on the defensive line.
Four running backs also, yep.
Right. Oh, yeah. So, I mean, I think on defense, if they'd had a fourth there, what they, you know.
Well, they get extra positions on defense.
Well, they do. You're right about that because
they're
not going to start three linebackers and five defensive
four,
backs.
4-3-5, which is going to be a really tough defense to score.
12? Yeah. If you can get away with 12 men on the field every down, then the rest of the
league
will
lose. They'll
be able
to fill the A, B, C, D, E, F, and G gaps.
Yeah.
Pretty good. Yeah.
That's good. All right. So at defensive end, Chris Murray or Darian Smith. So Darian, who is listed as a possible starter at defensive tackle, also listed as a possible starter there at defensive end, ahead of Nate Johnson.
Yep, and that doesn't surprise me at all. Darian is very quick, very athletic, and he's got some power as a sophomore. And, I don't think he's going to be the starting D-tackle against a big, powerful running team.
No.
But I think he can slide in there in passing situations and some running situations too. And then be a really good guy at the defensive end.
He's a guy that could really cause some problems when he's lined up at tackle and you've got guys like Jared Smith and Deshaun Womack on the outside.
Because he's quick and can really beat a man.
He's very good at penetration.
Yep.
The buck position there is interesting because we've seen a lot of work with Deshaun Womack and Jared Smith out there at the same time.
We have.
Didn't really know which one was a buck, which one was a defensive end.
Right.
Turns out they list them both as bucks, and we may well see both of them at the same time. They both had apparently very good falls because that's something Alex Golish has really been pleased with, and that's been the pass rusher down the stretch.
Yeah. And I'm very excited to see Joe Phillips there as a number three guy.
Man, he's a guy that has really worked hard to try to earn a spot.
Hopefully he can get some playing time in that game one just to boost that confidence, get him on the field, get him going a little bit.
At the linebacker spots, and there are three linebacker spots listed.
Yep.
There are
times when they will have three linebackers on the field, and probably maybe more times than usual now just because they love that position group so much, right?
The flexibility of the guys. I mean, Bryce Diaz is a guy that can slide back, and we've seen him work a little bit at nickel.
Right.
And they've even used him and DeMarcus Riddick as edge-type guys.
Yep.
So, yeah, they could be three guys who are listed as linebacker out there, but they may not necessarily all be playing linebacker. They've got Elijah Melendez or Bryce Diaz at one spot. And then,
which you would think is the middle linebacker of the Mike, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then Xavier Atkins or DeMarcus Riddick at another.
Which you think is probably the weak side or Willie. Yep. If that's the way they name them in this defense, there's different ways of doing
it. Mike, Willie, and Sam.
Yep.
And then the third one has Bryce Diaz and Michael Matthews Candy.
Who was a transfer from, I can't remember, was it Maryland? Right. No.
No, it's
been a minute.
It's a smaller school, I thought.
You're probably right. But it was Hampton.
Yeah.
And Alex Golish talked about him. I think it was Alex Golish. Said he was just a guy that brought him for depth, but he's had such a good camp that he's in the rotation now. So good for him. And if you can be in the rotation with the guys Auburn has, that's a really good sign that you're a pretty good player. So excellent for him. Auburn's also got a couple of freshmen. Linebackers that I think will play on special teams. And then, you know, in games when they can't get them in there, we'll start getting reps there at linebacker too.
And Matthew Scandi is the biggest of the bunch. I mean, he's a 6'3 guy, 6'3, 235.
Well, other than Elijah.
Well, Elijah's 240, but he's only but he's 6 feet.
6 foot, yes. He's going to hurt somebody.
In the secondary, it's really interesting because you've got Star.
Which is Nickel.
Right. And there it's Sly Smith-Reed or Champ Anthony or New Boy Fagans.
Right.
And then at one of the safety spots, it's Champ Anthony or New Boy Fagans.
Yep.
So out of those two spots, you only really have three players in those two spots, but you're five deep there, according to the two deep. And then the other safety spot is Eric Winters or Caleb Harris,
right?
With Fred Gaskins listed behind them.
You feel like that's probably the strong safety, Champ Anthony,
yes.
Fagans at the free safety, because they can both play star too.
Mm-hmm. Which you've got to be able to cover.
And it's good to see Gaskin. I thought Gaskin would fit in at star, but I can see where he can fit in at safety too. Absolutely.
Well, when you've already got three other guys like Sly, Champ, and New Boy,
right?
I mean, that's a nice situation to have there, because those guys are all physical enough to play the run, but they're all good enough cover guys to be able to cover slots and tight ends and players like that.
Now, four and five and six is something I wasn't sure of at cornerback, but now I have a better idea. But go through that. Yeah,
at the corners, one corner, Andre Jordan, the UCLA transfer, or Champ.
Right.
So I mean, Champ's gonna be all over the field. I mean, it'll be interesting. You see him out there, and he won't necessarily be at the same place he was the snap before.
I'm gonna be trying to figure. Okay, is he at corner?
It's gonna be tough.
It's gonna be tough.
And then Blake Woodby's listed there, and then the other corner is Rayshon Pleasant or Gavin Jenkins. Gavin Jenkins is a guy that I think is one of the players that has really stepped up and had a big-time fall.
6'2", 190, just a sophomore. Another USF transfer, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
And a guy who, if you watched him out there in the camp, when I watched him, I was impressed with the way he can move.
I was very impressed with his ability to backpedal and turn at that size.
Athletic. Yes, very athletic.
And then Shamar Arnaud is the youngster, who they really like him as well, too.
Yep.
He's just a little raw.
A couple of sophomores, him and Blake Woodby. Those are the guys I wasn't sure who was going to be there, but it's good to see them win some spots. They've got some other guys. Scrap Richardson, I think, will have some opportunities to play, certainly.
I mean, Blake Woodby's a guy that I thought might be, a nickel-type guy as well. So, I mean,
I think he's played that,
much flexibility there in the secondary.
No doubt.
So that's the defense and special teams. There's one surprise in special teams. Obviously, Alex McPherson's your place kicker, backed up by Connor Gibbs. Hudson Cock is the punter, with John McGuire or Max Burke, the newest Australian.
Be interesting to see if Connor Gibbs kicks off or how they do that, or if Alex still kicks off.
I think Alex wants to kick off again.
Okay.
I mean, it'll be interesting. I mean, Hopefully, Auburn's scoring so much that you need to give Alex a break and let Connor kick off a few times.
Yeah.
All right, the kick returner knew was going to be Rayshon Pleasant. Yep. The other kickoff returners listed are Bryce Kane, Omar Mabson, and Fred Gaskin.
Interesting.
And then the punt returner. This is the biggest surprise to me on the depth chart, because we've seen Christian Neptune out there.
Mm-hmm.
Every time.
Seeing Bryce Kane out there.
And Bryce Kane. Those have been the two guys that have
been
out there every time.
We've seen another DB, haven't we? Who else have we seen?
We've seen a couple of other guys.
I can't remember.
Out there. But the number one punt returner is Rayshon Pleasant.
How about that?
And that's something a lot of people wonder, well, why isn't your kickoff returner your punt returner? It's a lot different catching a kickoff. Kickoff's coming end over end.
And
a punt is spiraling.
A lot of times punt is just making a good decision, right?
And you're going to have somebody on you,
right?
Much more as a punt returner than you are as a kickoff returner.
But I love it, because Pleasant can change the game.
He is so dangerous with the ball in his hands.
Yep. So get him out there, get in that position, and make sure you have depth at cornerback that can sub in for him when he does get a big return or takes a big hit or something. You know, so he doesn't have to feel like he has to go out there and right away at cornerback.
Yeah, well, I mean, fortunately, you're hopefully going on offense after your return to kick. So
exactly.
Yeah, that's why you usually don't want you'd love it if it can be somebody on defense. Although, I mean, if he's been out there for 10 plays or something on defense, then maybe that's when you put somebody else in to return.
Right. Yeah, I didn't think about that.
And then the long snapper is Hudson Powell, who's back. Who came in with our new special teams coach. So yeah, he's a transfer from Miami of Ohio.
Oh, okay.
So there is your depth chart. Again, didn't see Rayshon Pleasant as a punt returner is the biggest surprise.
Yeah.
The biggest surprise to me. It's mostly guys we've been watching and been able to tell.
No big guys really missing necessarily.
No, that's true.
Yeah. So.
Yep. So all right. So that's what we have there. It is the bottom of the hour, and we'll be back with Brian's Monday musings on the other side. Love for you to join in to the final half hour of the Monday Drive, 334-321-1390. Come on in.
Auburn baseball coach Butch Thompson, and you're listening to The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final 20 minutes here on this Monday with Bill and Brian Matthews here in the studio. And, of course, Mondays with B-Matt here in the studio means we're going to get Brian's Monday musings. And always starts off with some athletics, generally Auburn, but, I mean, some athletics musings, then into the musical musings. And what directions you go today? Let's start with the
Just talked a little bit about expectations, what would be a good season and what wouldn't be necessarily. But I stick to 7-5 would be a good first season for Alex Golish, in my opinion.
I was asked today, would 7-5, because I said I think this team – I'm more optimistic than I was heading into fall camp or preseason camp, whatever you want to call it. And I see a path for this team to win at least 8 games. Now, I've seen that for the last couple of years.
Yeah, yeah.
But they should have.
Right.
They should have.
And 1-9 in one score games.
Yeah. Right. I mean, if this team can, and Alex margins talk, Alex Golish has talked about, you know, winning in the margins. If they can do that. And he talked special teams, you know, today about how important that can be. But I don't think this team is that short on talent that they can't win 8 games.
I agree.
So I said that to Doug earlier today, and he said, well, does that mean 7-5 would be a disappointment? I said, no, 7-5 wouldn't be a disappointment.
It would be great just to end that streak.
Now, the only way it would feel like a disappointment is if in the 5 games, and you can look right now and find 5 games that Auburn's going to be an underdog in.
Right.
And probably 6,
yeah.
Because they should be underdog in the road conference games against Georgia, Alabama, Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee, and Ole Miss.
Right,
I think they'll be underdogs in those 4.
Yep,
and they'll be underdog to LSU at home.
Yep,
so that's 5. So I mean, I could see where right now when you look at it, it looks like Florida's a slight favorite over Auburn.
Interesting.
But that ball game's at Jordan Hare. I still think this team could win 8. But the only way it would feel like a disappointment to me was if they got just destroyed in the losses.
Right.
If they weren't competitive.
Tough.
But, but, yes, I mean, 7 wins would be a step forward. And you want to just – what you want to see is you want to see them go out there and be, you know, competitive, hard-nosed, and look like they know what they're doing on both sides of the ball, which I haven't been able to say that.
No, we haven't.
You know, all the time over the last few years.
But I did say 7-5, but I said, but what if, you know, what if this team's a little bit better?
Yeah.
And I went back and compared it a little bit to 2013, not that they're going 11-1 or anything like that, but just the fact that Auburn's brought in the transfer.
Man, you had an X-factor at quarterback then.
Right,
absolutely.
Nick Marshall was incredible. Byron Brown, you know, could have similar type numbers. His numbers last year at USF were as good or better than what Nick Marshall did, you know, here as a junior,
right,
junior season in 2013. So, and there are some other things. You know, you look at it. Trey Mason had a, you know, had I think maybe the last play of the game against Alabama, he got to 1,000 yards or right there at the very end, and then he came out and had like 1,800
yards. 1,800 yards, right?
So Auburn has another senior running back who had I think 800 or 900 yards last year.
Yeah, right? Over 900.
Yeah, and you know maybe he can have a breakout season. Although I think the carries are going to be spread out more than it was in that 2013 with Trey Mason getting so many opportunities. And I don't think we'll see. And then I mentioned, you know, even though they don't have guys like Sammy Coates and Ricardo Lewis returning in, at Auburn, they got three receivers that combined for a whole bunch of yards and touchdowns returning to the same offense with the same quarterback.
My goodness, we were talking about Christian Neptune a while ago. He was the number four receiver last year at USF, and he had 35 catches.
Exactly. Those three guys, Singleton, Nimrod, Koger, combined 111 catches, 1,900 yards, 19 touchdowns. So that's pretty darn good. All three will be in the starting lineup, I believe, for game one for Auburn. Consider if they line up with three wide receivers, we'll see. They may go two tight ends, the way Ghost is talking about them so much. We'll see. And then you look at the defense. That was Ellis Johnson. That was a very average defense in 2013.
Oh, you're right.
And this defense should be better.
Should be, yes.
The only problem is, let me name you the starting offensive line in 2013, and you just can't compare it to it. You had
no, not yet. Obviously, you can't.
Greg Robinson, the number two overall pick in the NFL draft following spring. You had Alex Kozan, a redshirt freshman. You had Chad Slade. You had Restus Mukes, who was a junior. You had Avery Young, who was a redshirt freshman. So that is as talented an offensive line as Auburn's had.
Yeah, but
I don't think
Auburn's
had a talent. That's the most talented Auburn's offensive line. I don't think they've had one as talented since then.
Yeah. No, since. But you had a couple of those guys were first-year starters.
Right.
So, I mean, things need to come together. On offensive lines, so much of it is chemistry and them being able to, as Joel Gordon said today, think as one.
Yep. That team also was 6-0 in one-score games
in
the regular season.
Well,
they lost the final one.
When you're going to have a great game, you got to win the when you have a great year, you got to win the close games.
So that was part of it too. But and I didn't make the comparison to say that Auburn was going 11-1 and you know winning an SEC championship and going to the national championship. I was saying it because you can see where there's an opportunity for a turnaround.
Right? Oh yes,
there's definitely some similarities there where you can make the case that this Auburn team could maybe be better than expectations. And the musical journey, simple. We're going back just 6 days, the loss of the Queen of Country Music.
Right, with Dolly. Yeah. I figured you had to do Dolly. I mean, just
yes, I had to. And I'd done her, I think, about 5 or 6 years ago. I wrote about her, but I wrote much more details about her life and everything she's done.
Background to songwriter to then just unbelievable. Porter Wagoner time to... Yeah, just to stardom, to superstardom, to cross over to everything. I mean, books and movies and Dollywood and her philanthropy and my goodness, just she
crazy.
Just and just I mean, everyone who had ever been around her just talked about what a just a wonderful person.
And I didn't even realize this, but just in the last 3 years, she had 3 top 5 singles on the Billboard.
See, I didn't realize that either.
Yeah. So that's pretty impressive. Actress, philanthropist.
Were they like combos? Were there some duets or something?
Let's see.
I wouldn't be surprised.
One was a cover of her former song "Light of a Clear Blue Morning." She did with Lainey Wilson, Miley Cyrus, Queen Latifah, and Reba McEntire. I don't know if the other ones, 2023 "World on Fire." I don't know are 25 if you hadn't been there. I don't know if those were remakes or with other artists or not, but I just saw that they were top 5 singles on the Billboard 100. So just incredible career. I did some on Linda Ronstadt and Emmy Lou and her teaming up for an
trio.
Album. Yep, and had some great videos of them. I think it was on The Tonight Show and some other times. Those three together, which was incredible. 9 to 5. If you ever seen that movie,
it's
really, really good.
Really good. And she was great at it.
And it,
Bessel Whorehouse.
If you got to watch some of the, you know, the Dolly stuff on TV after she passed, a lot of that was talking about a 9 to 5. How she came up with that song, she came up with it playing it on her fingernails, I guess the bass of it or whatever, the sound of it on our fingernails.
It sounded like typing at the beginning.
Yes, yes. Just that's so creative to me. That's just incredible that she was able to do that. So I think I just mentioned this, but over 3,000 songs published.
Wow.
So,
wow.
Who knows, sometime in the future, somebody's going to get one of those songs, play it, it's become a big hit.
Oh, yes.
It would not surprise me at all. But Born, Wonder Cabin, Little Pigeon River in Pittman Center, Tennessee, Fourth of 12 Children, basically born in poverty, I guess you could say, and but never really turned her back on East Tennessee. That was her home. That was, did so much for that area. And, of course, Dolly World, Imagination? I'm trying to think of the name of her charity. It's Imagination. Anyway, she gave up, I think it was over 100,000 books a year.
Kids' books.
Yes. Yes, that was she sent out. It's 850,000 books to children each month. Excuse me. It's the Dolly Parton's Imagination Library, which was started in 1995. And it just started, I think, in Tennessee, then expanded to the U.S., and then expanded worldwide. So that's really incredible what she managed to do. Just one of the few people I think that could pass right now, and is just beloved in every corner of mm-hmm. this country and the world, right? That you just don't hear people saying many negative things about her.
No, that's absolutely right. Tell you what, we'll go ahead and get to our final break of the afternoon. Tommy, hang on. You're up first when we come back for the final segment here of the Monday Drive.
You're live on The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. We had Specter, lost him, got him back, lost him again.
Wow.
All right, I tell you what, Tommy, hang on, because Specter had called in, and did you hang up on, you hung up on Tommy?
Yeah, I don't know what.
Oh, man, well we got Specter now. Tommy, call back. We're putting the pressure on Brandon here down the stretch here at the end of the show. Hey, Specter.
Hey, well, he hung up on me, too. I had to call back. Hey, listen, I got a couple of Dolly questions for you.
All right.
With a kind of trivia. All right. There was one particular song that she wanted Elvis to sing for her. And Colonel Tom Parker wouldn't allow it because he didn't like the money.
Was it one of her songs or one of his songs?
No, one of her songs that she wanted Elvis to sing. She thought it was a fit for Elvis.
I heard this, but I cannot remember what it was.
I was going to say, I wouldn't be surprised if it's something like "I Will Always Love You," like Whitney's. I could see Elvis trying that.
That was it. That was
wow. I just figured that sort of fit. I mean, a big, powerful ballad.
Yeah. Well, stick with that song now. You know how that song got started?
Yeah, that's the song. That's what she wrote when she was leaving. When she was leaving Porter.
Yep.
That's right. She wrote it for Porter Wagoner.
Yeah, and she talked. I saw multiple interviews where she talked about that, and she'd get choked up every time when she was talking about how difficult that was.
You know what that show was called on TV? Porter Wagoner and
the Wagoneers.
Bill.
I pull that Bill one. Let me tell you, I pull that one. I can't claim that I watched it, but I remember my dad did.
Well, I'm not as old as your dad, but I watched it too.
Yeah, anyway. I remember it. I don't remember it being in color. Maybe we just had a black and white TV at the time. I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, it's getting close, guys.
Yeah, thank goodness.
Well, if Alex Goldish can come up with an offensive line that's going to do the trick since 2013, we'll have it made.
That would be a huge step. They seem to feel pretty good about it right now, Spectre. Yeah, we'll find out.
I don't think there's any way it could be as good as 2013.
No, but I think it can be a lot better than the ones we've seen the last few years.
Yes, that would be the hope for sure. That will be the hope.
Appreciate it, Specter. Is that Tommy back with us?
I haven't put him on yet. But
oh, yeah. Hey, let's see. Is that Tommy?
Yeah, now it's Tommy.
Hey, Tom.
How's it going?
Pretty good.
Hey, I hear there's a hearing in Louisiana Thursday.
Thursday,
about
right?
Whether Lane can have those NFL guys come back.
I'd be a little concerned if I'm the SEC because it's going to be in Louisiana.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, he's probably going to win it. But since Greg Sankey has said they're not going to allow NFL players back. I mean, are they going to toss LSU or I don't know. If the conference seems to be against Lane in court, and if Lane wins, then where are we?
Well, Sankey has said that they will abide by whatever the judge decides. So if the judge says they can play him, then he's if the judge actually is going to say you can't penalize them for doing that. Yeah, that's if that's the case, then Sankey says they'll have to abide by that.
And here's what an SEC official told Ross Dellinger of Yahoo Sports. He said, I'm sure this is off the record, like who he is, but there are plenty of other schools who will take their place. The feud between the league members and LSU has the makings of an unprecedented and historic decision. So this is getting very, very testy. Says SEC are exploring extreme measures to address LSU's plan to add former pro players, including boycotting competition, sanctioning the school with probation or expulsion, and filing a federal legal challenge. So it's not just going to be decided in the Louisiana court. I think
the rest of the league and the Big Ten and the rest of the Power Four has all said, no, we don't think it's right.
Right.
And even Kiffin has said he doesn't think it's right. Of course, now he's saying, but my players want me to get it. Well, sure.
Yeah.
So what? Your players would also say, let's don't practice and let's go
out
partying.
I'm all for taking whatever advantage you can in the Wild Wild West of college football. I completely understand that. But I'm not sure this is a hill that Lane Kiffin and LSU need to die on, right? If you're really putting your status from the SEC at risk.
Are any of these guys difference makers?
No, they're just backup guys, I think, mostly.
That's what
I guess Pyburn would be a starter, right?
Yeah, if he came.
And I think his plan was that he got dropped or he got released. If he didn't get picked up by an NFL team, then he was going to try to come back to LSU. So that, I guess, could make a difference, kind of. But still, it's just not worth, you know, putting your school or your membership or your coach or whatever at risk, in my opinion.
Yeah, I was just – this seems to be a little different, you know. I mean, one school going in one direction and the SEC, the rest of the schools going in a different direction. It kind of looks like it could implode.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Lane seems to like this and almost wants to, you know, thrive in it. But
he does. he really does.
I think this is a ledge that's dangerous to be stepping out on.
And you would think cooler heads prevail, but if you look at the people in charge of LSU right now, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of cooler heads over there.
It starts with the governor.
Yeah. So that'll be interesting to see what happens. This could be one of the biggest stories in college football in many years.
Kidding.
If this continues to go down the road,
it'd be kind of interesting if Pyburn is if he can do it and get the NFL guys to come back. If Pyburn would play Sunday night,
that would be wild.
Yeah. Lane says he's got to turn. I think he's got to turn the official list in before the end of the week.
Yeah, crazy.
More little musical stuff that just popped up.
Good stuff, Tommy, man. That's some great points.
I just saw this from Variety. Ella Langley's Choosing Texas has broken the record for the most weeks at number one on the Billboard Hot 100 for a non-holiday song, spending 20 weeks at the top.
Pretty lively crowds.
Yes.
And folks had a great time.
And if it holds on for three more weeks, it'll surpass Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You.
Wow.
So, I mean, incredible.
That is amazing.
Incredible for that young Auburn gal. So, you go.
Yeah. Yep. Big crowds there the over the weekend.
Yes.
That was just something. Brian, before we're out of time, let everybody know how they can keep up with everything that you and the guys have got going there at auburnsports.com.
Yeah, we're going to continue to blow out the coverage of Auburn sports, especially football, as we get, just 5 days away from kickoff. At Mercedes-Benz Stadium, I will be there. We'll have plenty of coverage, more coverage from Alex Golish and the coordinators today, players tomorrow, and Alex Golish again Wednesday, plus recruiting news, plus anything else that pops. We'll be there. We'll have full coverage. AuburnSports.com. Sign up for a special 75% off your annual subscription right now. You can follow me on Twitter, @BMattAU.
Brian, great stuff as always. See you over there tomorrow for the interviews.
I'll be there.
And then we'll see you in Atlanta.
That's right.
All right. That's going to wrap things up for the Monday drive. Tomorrow, we are at the War Eagle Supper Club there at the Graduate Downtown. Jason Caldwell and I are going to be there tomorrow, so looking forward to that. Hopefully, you'll join us. If you can't make it there in person, at least give us a call. That's going to do it for the Monday drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.